The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Expert advice to keep the whole family healthy at All Care, the largest Irish-owned pharmacy brand.
And a very good afternoon to you. It's Brenda Donoghue here. I would love your company and your thoughts today on 51551 or email us ray@rte.ie. Well, do you know what? The wasps must have heard me giving out about them during the week, and they've exercised their revenge, revenge of the wasps, because my poor little fella Harvey got stung in the back of the ear yesterday at soccer camp. He's fine. All fine. Thanks, wasps. I knew you'd get me back in your own way. On the show today, Rachel and her mum, Marie, will be here to tell us about coping with Marie's terminal diagnosis. Fiona Looney is going to chat about everything that's going on in her world. And fasten your seatbelts. Tipperary's finest, the two Johnnies, will join me in studio. Looking forward to that one. Anyway, yesterday, now we were having a great chat about voluntary contributions that they're being asked for in schools because the Labour Party is calling to ban them, saying that they're fees in disguise. Well, it started a really good conversation, but between this and that, I didn't get to read through many of your comments. So I really wanted to go back to it and read a few now. So here we go. Hi, Brenda. My kids' primary school is in Sutton in Dublin. We're asked for an annual voluntary contribution of €250 per family. But then in addition to that, whenever they're on day trips or bus hires, talks or school trips, we're always asked then for an additional fee for that event. We've been told that the voluntary contribution is used to improve school buildings, new windows, etc. The board of the school have said they tried to lobby the government for funding, but have apparently been told that the school gets the bare minimum because it's in an affluent area. So therefore, parents can raise the necessary money needed for the school. There you go. Here's another one. Geez, I bet you'll find it's the parents who go abroad 2 to 3 times a year are the ones whinging about voluntary contributions. I can't afford it, but then I always pay my voluntary contributions. If it means that my kids have toilet paper when they need it, I'm more than happy to pay it. And here's one from a teacher in Dundalk. It said, and this is really interesting because I think we all know teachers who do this. Teachers are expected to spend a lot of their own wages on school items like prizes, supplies, projects and so on. The money simply isn't there in schools. And if I want to keep lessons fun and engaging, I end up spending hundreds, really, of my own money every year. What other occupation requires that you spend your own money for the benefit of your job? And that comes in for a teacher in Dundalk. And we all know teachers who are so generous and they give little prizes out and little medals to the kids and little gifts, particularly at the end of the year, which all come out of their own pockets. And it makes the children feel wonderful and special. A good teacher, you just couldn't be more grateful as a parent for a good teacher. And they do go above and beyond. And there's one teacher in Dundalk. And the last one on this for now is, as a secondary school teacher in a voluntary school, I find it a disgrace when I see how much is spent on buses for hurling teams that make up a small percentage of the students involved. Parents should insist on seeing the school accounts before paying the voluntary contribution. And that comes in from a teacher in Galway. And we know that this is definitely an ongoing issue. So keep your thoughts coming in, 51551. And we'll see what's going to happen and where this particular topic is going to go. Now, there's a piece in the Irish Daily Mail today about heartbreak, but not about the romantic heartbreak. It's an article about what happens when a friendship comes to an end. We've all been there. Haven't we all been there? Yeah, they're nodding. And for some reason or another, friendship just isn't working and you have to go your separate ways. Do you sit down and say, look, it's not me, it's you? Do you have that chat? Or do you just let the friendship kind of fizzle out by not returning the text or calls? It's actually really upsetting and complicated to end a friendship. And some people say it's even harder than breaking up with a partner. Have you ever had to end a friendship? What were your reasons? How did you actually go about doing it? And I know for me, as you get older in life, not that I'm old and very young and all that, but as life changes, you know, careers, partners, families, in-laws, outlaws, all of these things become priorities. and you tend to shed acquaintances, maybe toxic friends, or friends you just don't have anything in common with anymore. I mean, we were chatting in the office about this, and a lot of the time you might have somebody with children, you have somebody without children, and they're not friends, and you bring the children, do you not? And you're never really going to give somebody 100% of your attention as a friend. If you've got your kids with you, do they have to be really understanding because you've come along with your kids with you? It's a really complicated one. Or do they understand that, you know, you don't really have the space not to bring them, you've no one to mind them? It actually is a bit of a minefield. And I want to hear from you. Have you been on the other side of this where you've been dumped as a friend? And that must be really, really tough if you thought the person was one of your best friends. So whether you're a teenager, an adult, this is a topic that happens to everybody. Do let us know what you think. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. I couldn't believe this actual date when I read it today. Can you believe that on this day, 50 years ago, feels only like two, Concert Goers were kicking off 3 days of music and peace at Woodstock Music Festival in 1969. The iconic musical festival saw 400,000 people flock to a dairy farm in New York to see 32 musical acts. Ought to have been there, imagine, including legendary musicians like Janis Joplin, The Who, Grateful Dead and Jimi Hendrix. The concert has been hailed as one of those moments that changed the history of rock and roll music. And still, 50 years on, people remember that festival, which had a huge impact on a whole generation. So today, I would like to know, what music moment do you remember? What's the best concert you've ever been to? Were you at Woodstock all those years ago? And what gig stands out as the best performance you saw? Was it Prince in the RDS? That was one of my best. Or Lisa Marie Love, Take That, in Crow Park? Tell us your story. I do remember the very first concert I went to. It was about 13, 14, and I went with my cousin Gráinne O'Leary, afternoon Gráinne, and we went to see Chris de Burgh and the RDS. Oh my God, we thought we were so cool, telling everybody in the class we were going. My father drove me up, he waited outside till the concert was over, and we sang along in this community of people, our first experience of that mass happiness as you sing along to Spaceman Came Travelling, Lady in Red. Patricia the Stripper, of course. That was ours. We thought we were cool. And many other amazing concerts ever since. It's a great joy. So let us know, what is yours? 51551. Email ray@rte.ie. And a Galway student here says, a good teacher not only makes you feel good, but can also make you love the subject. I've just finished my junior cert and I had an amazing Irish teacher. He really made the subject more interesting and inspired us. And that comes in from a Galway student. Will you text us back and tell us the name of the teacher and we'll give him an old shout out? Why not? I got rid of my best friend 6 weeks ago, oh dear, because I had enough of her, Brenda. She always uses me when she needs something, money, support, but she's never there for me. She always makes every occasion about herself. Good riddance, I say. We'll keep those texts coming in. 51551. Have a listen to this, everybody. Which one of these sounds breaks your heart more? This one. Or is it this one? Yeah, well, according to a team of researchers in Denmark, humans have become so attached to their dogs that the sound of a dog whining is as sad as a baby crying. For the study, they played audio of cats, dogs and children wailing to 297 people. Some were pet owners, some weren't. And it found that participants rated dogs and babies whimpering as equally sad. Maybe that's hard to believe, maybe it isn't, especially if you aren't really an animal person. But if you're a dog person, the dog is totally part of your family, so it makes sense again. So I ask you, which one pulls on your heartstrings more? Is it this one? The little doggy. Or is it this one that hops you out of the bed and you race to the cough? Oh, genie. Will somebody change that child's nappy? Hurry up. Will you give it a bottle? Which of those sounds? We want to know. 51551. I think we'll take a little bit of music. It's The Cure and Love Cats. And The Cure and Love Cats there. I have never seen them in concert, But I reckon they'd be pretty good as well. That's The Cure. You're jumping in with so many amazing concerts. I'm really jealous, particularly of Joe in Cork. He said he saw Elvis in Pittsburgh on New Year's Eve in 1976. He never saw anything to come near it since. Was lucky enough to be in Live Aid in 1985 and plenty of other gigs, but that won't be topped in my opinion, says Shay. Best concert ever was Billy Joel, Madison Square Garden on May the 9th this year. Best concert I've been to in Ireland was Defo, Coldplay in Croke Park in July 2017. And yeah, my daughter loved that one. She was at that one. I was at Freddie Mercury and Slane in 1986 at Trish and Ballyshannon. Need I say any more? No, Trish, you definitely don't. Smith's Limerick, 1982. Brilliant. Now, this one I was at myself and I should have said it. It was definitely just... I saw him twice actually in Kilmainham. Leonard Cohen's last concert in Ireland at The Point. 2 hours of brilliance. Well, I saw him twice in Kilmainham. Amazing. Like just, oh, I can't even go there. The silence from the crowd. It was just wonderful. The man was a genius. He certainly was a genius. Love him. We're about 50-50 on the baby versus dog sounds. Which one pulls at your heart more? Baby, baby, baby crying every time. The puppy, says Anne Doyle. The poor babog. Both equally painful. I'm just looking. There was one I wanted there. And where is it now? I'll find it in a minute. What am I like? There's so many texts coming in. All at the one time. The poor babog pulls at my heart every time. And there was one that came in there. I just remember it. It said... the baby's just driven her dog mad. Anyway, we take a break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And it's Brenda here until 4:30 today. Love your company, 51551. A lot coming in on friendships and some very mixed stories here. It said, Brenda recently ended two long friendships. One with a friend who displayed narcissistic behaviour. Unfortunately, it took me over 20 years to realise this. The other friend, who I've known for approximately 30 years, shut me down when I made reference to same-sex attraction, despite her knowing for as long as we've been friends that I'm gay. I have a number of good friends and will now get on with my life without these two people in it. Brenda, I was on the receiving end of being dropped when our baby died nearly 2 years ago. Oh dear, my goodness. And rather than facing up to something really sad, some friends just disappeared on us and I felt like people thought sadness was contagious. I've worked hard at hiding my grief as I would never want to upset anybody else or make them dread meeting me. We laugh a lot genuinely, but hold our heartbreak to ourselves and close family, and our dear friends still love us. Thankfully, as we do them, but the hurt can only be, and but the hurt you can cause by just dropping out of someone's life needs to be considered. Well, that's a very sad case there, and I'm glad you have your family and close friends to help you. Brenda, I think the essence of keeping a friendship going requires commitment on both sides. There's nothing like face-to-face communication which strengthens the bonds of friendship, says Fran in Dublin. Thank you very much for that, Fran, 51551. Now, you may remember yesterday at the top of the show, we spoke to Grace Healy, who's a mother from Cork, and she saved her two-year-old son, David, by performing CPR on him. Anyway, the point of her sharing the story was really to encourage people to learn CPR. Now, Grace definitely struck a chord with you because we were inundated with queries about how to go about learning CPR. One listener wrote, Brenda, I have a 10-month-old baby and he's forever putting things in his mouth. Please advise how I can learn CPR and how much does it cost? And another one said, Brenda, I've learned CPR many years ago, but I've lost my confidence. I wouldn't rely on my memory in the event of such a crisis like the one Grace described. I would love to do a refresher course. I need to know how to act so I don't forget Grace's story. So I am now joined on the line by Bridget Sinnott, and she is the resuscitation manager with the Irish Heart Foundation. How are you, Bridget?
I'm good, Brenda, and yourself?
Good. Well, I believe you got a huge response to Grace's story as well. A lot of people are asking, what can they do? How can they get on top of this issue?
Yeah. They certainly are, and we have a solution for them. There's no doubt about it. We have a program that's available. We have a free CPR training program across the country. It's called Hands for Life, kindly sponsored by ESB Networks and Abbott, and it's available to any community that wishes to host a course, or they can, people can just log in and they can take the course with us at a venue near themselves. And as I said, it's free to everybody. And the course just takes an hour to complete, so it's very easy for people to attend.
You see, that's the thing. Some people, when you think about having to do a course on CPR, you think, oh, that's going to be, you know, one night a week for 8 weeks, and it's all about time. I was amazed to think it was only an hour.
Well, there are a number of different courses out there, and not to take away anything from the other courses, but generally speaking, certified courses. Exactly. Yeah. So, like, we have a number of certified courses, as do several other voluntary organisations, certified courses. This course, it's 1 hour long, and it's an awareness course, but you get the opportunity to practice CPR. The real emphasis is on making the emergency call, and we have dispatch-assisted CPR here in Ireland, and the idea there is that when you make the emergency call, the person on the other end of the phone, the call taker, is trained to ask you the correct questions, to identify if it's a cardiac arrest, to identify the urgency of the call, and they are there then to help you. You know, to, as I said, identify if it's a cardiac arrest or a choke, and then they'll give you advice as to what to do. But obviously, if you've attended a course, well, then at least when they're giving you those directions, you have a much better chance of understanding why they're asking you the questions and how to do the little tasks that they ask you to do.
So, if a person, you heard Grace yesterday and her story about her son David and the peanuts, and he was only 2.5 and all of that, and luckily she's a nurse and trained in CPR. But if a person finds themselves in a difficult situation, like Grace, what's the best action? What should they do straight away?
Straight away, what they need to do is ring the emergency services on either 999 or on 112. And then the call taker then will ask you a number of different questions. And that's when people sometimes get frustrated, because they're asking them, you know, where they are and what's happening. But they have to do all of that, because immediately they're sending an ambulance. And things that you can do that really assist the emergency services is by knowing your air code, because that helps first responders and it helps the ambulance service to find you that much quicker. Like, imagine driving into a housing estate and there could be hundreds of houses.
It's the third turn on the left after the right, behind the cul-de-sac.
Exactly. So by knowing your air code, that's one thing. And the other thing,
hang on a second, just hang on. I'm just looking outside here at the window. How many people hands up outside know their air code off by heart? Do you know it? No? Not one person. There you go. Everybody get your air code, including myself.
Exactly. Yeah. And also, you know, you should also have the air code of the studios there, so that people know if an emergency happened within RTE that you're also able to give it. Now, in fairness, I suppose most people would know where RTE studios are, but still there's lots of buildings there. So, you know, so like the thing is that it's to have these things clear in your mind, because if you try to give directions in a panic and you don't know where the ambulance is coming from or anything else, it can be really difficult, especially in rural Ireland. So, know your air code. The second
thing, there are 8 people outside, not one of them knew it, including myself. Isn't that terrible?
Go in and educate them, Brenda.
Well, there you go. You've just made an amazing point, Bridget.
Yeah. And then the other thing is, learn how to put your phone on loudspeaker. And the reason that we're saying that is that because then you can actually start doing the CPR and you're talking with the call taker. So they're telling you what to do and you can perform CPR. Because you can imagine trying to cradle a phone under your neck, whereas if it's on the speaker, you can put it on the floor beside you. And they're just two small little tips that everybody should learn how to do.
Yeah.
Then they will direct you then how to do the CPR. And CPR, it's actually a very, very simple skill. And we shouldn't be making it complicated. And back years ago, it was complicated. And people had a fear that they'd get in trouble for doing it. And we're always saying, it's better to do CPR on someone who doesn't need it than not do CPR on someone who does. And I suppose some of these things, and working on the out-of-hospital cardiac arrest strategy group, we came up with this, that we needed a simple, clear course that would go through the phone call, would get people to practice their CPR, that there'd be AED awareness on, that we'd show people how to relieve choking, that we'd show them how to do child CPR, we'd show them how to recognise heart attack, we'd show them how to recognise a stroke. So simple things, and as I said, it's an awareness course. But the feedback that we're getting from people is that, wow, I feel so much more confident now than I did coming into this course. And I don't care, anybody can spare an hour in their day to learn this.
I'm just trying to remember. I think the middle child got helper, but in TY year, they did that. I think, isn't it a really good and simple thing for schools to do as well? And then you're armed, you know, you've got a younger population armed with that if they come across a situation, which, please God, they never will, but, you know.
Well, in 2016, we, and this was with sponsorship from Bank of Ireland, we launched the CPR for Schools programme. And what happened was that we teach the teachers how to facilitate this short course, the very same course, and we teach the teachers how to facilitate that. They then teach it to the students within the schools. And there's now over, I think it's roughly 450 schools now involved in the CPR for Schools programme. And the idea is that the students in post-primary schools learn CPR at least 5 times while they're in school. So you can imagine the confidence of someone having done that short course 5 times while they're in school compared to someone who'd never, ever attempted it. It's huge. And all of the research would say that even if you've attended a course once in your life, you're 10 times more likely to respond in the event of an emergency. Because obviously you know how to recognise it, you know how to make the phone call, and then you know how to get the help. So that's why it's important. And the other side of it is that we want people practising on mannequins. Because obviously if the call taker tells you to place your hands in the centre of the chest and to push down 2 inches, 5 centimetres, and they count out with you then, they go 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, and you do your compressions to that speed. If you've attended that class, when they start giving you those directions, at least you know how to follow them. Mm. And that's the thing, they're very calming on the other end of the phone, and like, it really can make the difference between life and death.
And is it that they're 10 times more likely to have a success rate if they've done in helping somebody who may find themselves with a cardiac arrest or something like that, if they've done the CPR course?
That wouldn't be, that probably wouldn't be. I don't think we even have that information.
Okay. But
it's that they'd be 10 times more likely to react in the emergency.
Properly,
And I mean, all of the research tells us that it's good quality CPR and early defibrillation are the two things that save lives. And that's where this course is the start. It's the first link in the chain of survival, as we talk about. I'm sure you've heard about all the community first responder groups that are setting up around the country. And these people are within their own communities responding. And they're getting there before the ambulance service because that's no fault to the ambulance service, because how can there be an ambulance on every corner? And we all need to remember that over 70% of cardiac arrests in Ireland actually happen in the home. So when you're learning this CPR, it's more than likely one of your own family members that you'll ever have to perform CPR on rather than a stranger.
Well, as I said, Grace really struck a chord, didn't she, with many, many people yesterday.
Of course, yes.
And she described that panic and the fear. And thank God David is doing really well. And she's very happy with his progress. But I just want to say, if people want to get involved in that course, want to know more information, they can contact irishheart.ie. Isn't that right, Bridget?
Yes, or they can look on handsforlife.ie, and we have a list of upcoming courses. Now, the courses are being added every day, and this campaign will be going on for another year and a half. And just to say that if anybody wants to organise it within their own community, we're asking to have about 90 people, because that's what we want to train in your community, at least. And or they can email us on handsforlife@irishheart.ie.
Well, Bridget, thank you so much for joining us, because I know you're quite busy. Bridget Sinnott, she's the resuscitation manager with the Irish Heart Foundation, and some brilliant advice there.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, Brenda here. Some very good tips. Thank you coming in on the show today. Put your air code on top of your house phone and back it up on your mobile. Thanks for a very interesting programme. Thank you, Joan, for listening in Blanchardstown. I have two guests in studio. Hello.
Hello.
How are you? So for 24-year-old Rachel O'Neill, her mum Marie's terminal cancer diagnosis turned her life upside down, as one can imagine. And Marie Carberry was given just 6 months to live.
Yes.
And now both mother and daughter are determined to get through things together. Rachel and Marie are here to share their stories. Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.
Rachel, you wrote about this and how you felt and everything.
Yeah.
Why? And that was a brave move.
Yeah, no. So,
and did you mind?
No, I didn't. She showed it to me beforehand.
Okay, yeah.
I always show mum before I write anything. But I wrote about this initially when I was the editor of the College Tribune in UCD. So writing about it has always been like a therapy for me more than anything, because if it's all in my head, it just drives me up the wall. Whereas if it's out in a piece of paper, it's much easier. And I'm a really open person. So like putting it out into the world is kind of like easier again, because it's like, okay, well, then people aren't going to ask you weird questions or odd questions or wonder why you're suddenly crying in a bathroom somewhere.
And Marie, first of all, and I said this during the ad break, for somebody who has a really tough diagnosis, you look $1 million. Like, your skin is like vibrant and your eyes are vibrant. Can I go back? Tell me, when were you first diagnosed? What age were you?
I was 48, and it was around Christmas 2009, 2010. And I found a lump, hard lump, the size of a strawberry nearly, under my arm. Not on my breast, but under my arm. And I thought, oh, this is a bit odd. So, of course, it was Christmas and I had to wait until the GP opened. So I went headed to the GP, and he was very on the ball, and he immediately referred me to a breast consultant in the Hermitage Clinic, Mike Allen. And Mike took me in and did a biopsy that evening and said he'd get back to me ASAP.
Did you know yourself?
No. Oh, well, I'd Googled it. You needn't worry.
Of course.
I'd come up with everything, actually. Yeah. And I went into him the following week, and it was very funny, actually, because I, at the time, I was completely flat-chested. Like, just a pair of nipples, to be honest, you know. That's all I had. And so when I sat up...
More than a handful, you know.
Oh, God. And he said, he drew two breasts on the sheet of paper, and because they were so big, I didn't think they were mine, you know. So I said, oh, that's grand. But then he drew an X under the arm, and then I knew. And then he told me I had breast cancer, and I needed to be scanned, and he'd take it from there. So I was scanned the following week, and it was nowhere else. It was in my lymph node, obviously, but it was nowhere else. And he said to me, mastectomy, and I said, staple me to the hospital door and take it off.
Yeah.
You know, I just said, it's disease and I don't want it anymore. So
it was triple negative breast cancer,
which is the most aggressive breast cancer you can get. And so I did the mastectomy, and then I did 6 months chemotherapy, and I did about 2 or 3 months radiotherapy. And then the following year I did a reconstructive surgery and I got bigger boobs. Which is great. And so with triple negative, if it's going to come back, it usually comes back within the first 2 years. If you get to 5 years, it more or less won't come back. I got to 6 years and it came back. And it came back in my neck again, a little lump in my neck. And from there, I got some treatment, but from there it progressed to my spine, a small lesion on my spine. And that was kept in control for more or less the next 2.5 years. No pain, no nothing. And then just this Christmas gone by, I had a bit of an incident at home and I lost my
Christmas
memory.
Christmas is not a good time for you.
It's a terrible time. It's a terrible time. I lost my memory, lost my ability to walk, and I was taken into hospital straight away.
Yeah.
And I was diagnosed with brain cancer. So after 3 Bs now, I have breast, bone and brain.
Yeah.
And I had 10 or 15 radiotherapies, and within the first 3 radiotherapies, my memory started to come back. And after about 5 or 6, I could put one foot in front of the other. So it's been a bit of a long process since then, but I'm able to talk, I'm able to walk, my memory is there. The treatment I got was just fantastic. So onwards and upwards, you know.
And Rachel, when your mum was first diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer, you would have been what age, teenager?
15, I think I was doing my junior cert.
Oh God, what was that like?
Oh, I think I was 15, so I was your typical teenage. Oh, this is terrible.
It's all about me.
It's all about me, though. What about my junior cert? As if that mattered in any regard.
Yeah.
But I remember being upset, but I remember being more upset that I didn't understand why mum wasn't able to, like, drop me to the bus or let me... Like, I remember just being more angry. Like, I didn't understand how serious it actually was, because we heard breast cancer. I didn't hear triple negative till I was much older. Mm. So it was more about, oh, mum's got cancer. Oh, mum's bald. Oh, God, that's weird. And then, oh, it's gone again. Okay. Like, it was hard. It was really hard. But
I think when you're 15, you're just more narcissistic
and self-involved. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. And you have another a son as well?
A son, yeah. He's 21.
He's 21. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So in a way, Rachel, you would have grown up through, I mean, it's a long process, the treatments, the chemo, the radiation, the waiting, it's come back. So cancer really would have been part of your life for so long.
Yeah, I don't really remember a time without it now at this rate. Like those 6 years where mum was in remission, it was like, oh, it's gone, grand, cool. And I didn't think about it. And then it's kind of just, it hasn't consumed my life, but it's been a major part of my life now since, what, the end of 2017?
When I went
on Erasmus, like, I think. So it's just there in the back of your mind all the time. It's just kind of like, not in a grim way, but just it's present.
Yeah. Okay, so obviously you have a very close relationship.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, we have a very good relationship. Yeah.
We look very similar.
You do, actually.
Yeah.
You do.
Yeah.
And so when you realised that your mum, you know, was very sick, how did that change how you were together, Rachel? Did it heighten the intensity to...
Well, I'm a really intense person to begin with.
Okay,
so if you
can
imagine...
So imagine by 10.
Yeah, basically by 10. Yeah, when somebody tells you that suddenly that you're... Like, you always know that you're... Triple negative generally means, when it comes back, it means terminal, fine, cool, great. But that didn't kind of come into my mind.
That's not great.
No, it's not. But when it went to the brain, then I was like, "This is serious now. This is the end zone." And that's when I have generalized anxiety disorder, so which is mostly under control. But that just the intensity of it was really raised because suddenly I was there going, "I need to say all these things to my mother. I need to tell her I love her. I need to make every moment as meaningful as I can," which is exhausting. And also, if everything is meaningful, then nothing is meaningful. So you really have to pick and choose your moments and kind of just enjoy the normality that you can still get, I think, more than anything.
So when it came back, Marie, and it was, you know, in the spine and in the brain as well.
Yeah.
Were you given a timeline?
When it came back in the lymph of the second time, he did say to me, 2 to 3 years or whatever. And so when I came back then in the brain, when I woke up in the hospital, he was sitting, my oncologist is fantastic, John Kennedy in James's. He's absolutely fantastic. He was sitting beside me and he said, you let me do the worrying and you live your life. And he had said that to me when I got breast cancer before, and I really bought into that. So all I'd ever wanted to do was travel, myself and my husband. So I said, this is my chance, baby. So I got together as much money as I could and we blasted it.
Where'd you go?
We were in India 4 times. We were in Thailand, we were in Cambodia, we were in Vietnam, we were in Laos.
Japan.
We were in Japan. And we just gave it the holly. I'd worked in the Bank of Ireland for 20 odd years and my pension was due. So rather than leave my pension where it was and let it die with me, I took it out.
Good for you.
And gave it a lash. And I never regretted it.
No.
And so you were told, okay, maybe 2-3 years, and you said, right, I'm going to live my life. You went off, you travelled. I don't mean to repeat it, I'm just trying to get it in my head.
Yeah.
And when you were travelling,
yeah,
did you feel like I am a sick person?
Never.
What
I never
did you feel like? That.
No. I felt lucky that I was there. It was such a privilege to be able to go. It's such a privilege to wake up every day without pain and just go out and live my life. It's been a privilege, you know. It hasn't changed me as such, you know, and made me holier than thou or whatever.
But God forbid,
yeah. But it did give me a different perspective on material things, I suppose, which is holier than thou, you know, but it just made me appreciate everything all the more.
So were you actually told then 6 months?
That's the brain.
Yeah,
the brain. Yeah. The chances are 6 months. But they're trying different medications on me and at the moment I'm stable.
Yeah.
And I was in the hospital actually this morning and because I have extra, as they call it, an invasion in my spine and it's affected my leg and I'm finding it hard to walk. But the oncologist was there, and I'm starting radiotherapy on Monday, and he said the pain will go. He said, and he said, I firmly believe I'll see you here again next year. So I was looking and saying, God, this is great. You know,
how
great.
Do you deal with that? That's like a roller coaster.
It is a roller coaster.
You're 6 months, we see you next year. How do you deal with it, Rachel?
I don't think I've stopped being in shock since about January of this year, to be honest. You just kind of go with it, and Mum makes it a lot easier because, you know, you can get upset, and I do get upset, but she's always had the attitude of, we'll just keep going until we can't anymore, kind of. So, like, she'll take all the medications, she'll take all the treatment options, and also, it's not like we're all sitting there in a circle counting down to her inevitable demise. Like,
it's terrible talking about
it. No, it's not. It's reality.
It's reality.
Like,
is it not?
It's just not. It just is. My situation just is, and I wake up every day and I say, well, this is it. Not this is it, sorry.
No, not this is it.
This is what it is. Or today is, there is only today.
Yeah.
There is only today for me. So if I wake up like this morning or tomorrow morning and I'm feeling good, great, I'm having a great day. And I am having a great day, and I'm luckier than some people. Do you know what I mean? It's not all bad by any means.
No.
And I've never had pain. And I've lots of good friends, family, and the works.
And we are talking about friendship today.
Very important.
So how important have your friends been, or how have they helped you in both the different things you're both going through?
I can't drive at the moment, but I was talking to my oncologist this morning, and I will be able to drive, but I can't drive at the moment. And they, when I came out of hospital, my neighbours organised a rota, a cook rota, and they cooked me dinner every single night for about 3 weeks. Like, there was food coming out to greet me in the hall. And they bring it on. We have a WhatsApp group. If I need anything, I just put it on the WhatsApp group. Somebody's down straight away. You know, my friends have been amazing. My family have looked after me. You know, as well. You know, they really do look after me as well. So it's hard, but it could be worse, Brenda.
It could be. Well, you know, I don't know. I'm thinking of Rachel. You're what age? 24?
24, yeah.
Okay. So you're out. Do you party? Do you like to have fun?
I actually live out of home now. So I'm living in Clontarf with my roommate because I work in Dublin. I work in advertising. And it's been hard, but also my friends have been utterly, utterly fantastic. Like, I have friends who have checked in every day or every week. I have friends who make me talk when they know I'm down. They bring me out. They make sure I'm not thinking about it. They distract me from everything. And they let me be myself if I want to open up or not. And then my workplace let me work from home on a Monday so I can be at home with my mother, which is a huge thing. My work have been so good to me.
Okay, say who they are, because you might want Tuesday as well.
No, publicists. I work for publicists, and I started there last year, and it's been one of the best years. They've been so helpful and so understanding with everything. Like, they've been honestly a blessing.
Okay, and are you in... How can I put it? If you think something is coming, you don't mind starting about you like this, right?
Okay.
But you think, you know, you're given this timeline of 6 months, and then it might change. And are you in a perpetual state of kind of, I suppose,
grief?
Grief, or thinking about what might come? Anticipatory grief.
I think the way I can put this probably is when Mum was diagnosed with brain back in January, I was there at night that night writing her eulogy in my head. Which is really grim, but that's how I deal with it. It's a perpetual state of grief. And then you kind of get over that bit after a little while. And then you're like, okay, this is what I have to do. And we're just going to be there for Mum and just do the normal stuff. Like, do the big stuff, like the family parties, the family events, the McDonald's, whatever. And then it's the normality of it. And the normality is actually more important to me than the big meaningful things. Like, you can you can say all the things you want to say, which is really important, but I'd rather just kind of sit there and watch Pointless or really in the ears in the news with my mum more than anything else, to be honest.
It is,
What was I thinking of? Sorry, I kind of drifted in the middle of kind of wondering how amazing you both are. But I'm thinking of you, Marie, and apart from being sick, you're obviously a mother too.
Yes.
So you're probably trying to mother Rachel through, you know, and your son. And take care of them.
Yeah.
So how are you managing that? Because that's difficult, because you'll always be mother number one.
Yeah. And I always, from the start, we always talked about cancer. Mm. It wasn't a dirty word in the house. Like, my son would always say, "Oh, ma'am, you're playing the old cancer trick again there. You know, when I need to get something done, when I need to get a space on a CIE school bus." Yeah. I can't, you know, and he said, "I can't believe you played that cancer trick again."
Whatever.
You know, yeah. But yeah, talk about it and don't.
What I'm saying is, do you worry about them?
Of course I do. I worry about them less though, because when I read that article, and while it was a kick in the gut, you know, it was, oh God, love her, you know. It's great that she can do it and that she can talk about it. And yeah, it is great. It's great for me because I don't have a problem talking about it. Some people.
No. Listen, we've only got till half four.
Sorry,
we'll keep going.
Yeah. So I don't mind talking about it. And I don't mind if people ask me about it, you know, at all, if I'm out. Some people are strange. They come up and they say, well, I'd had less hair, say, a couple of weeks ago, and say, "Did you have cancer?" And I say, "Well, yeah." "All right."
That's why you're here. No.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because you've a timeline. Yeah. Or they've saying it's terminal.
A shifting timeline.
Shifting timeline. Okay. So, yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Do you think about, well, if I'm not around, Rachel gets married, kids, grandkids, all of that. Is that tough? Is that a really hard question?
No, it's not a hard question. And it's, yeah, it is, because I will miss that. But maybe I won't. Mm. You see, that's the thing. Maybe I won't. But we were talking about this last night about what would you miss? And I said, I really want to see the end of Brexit. Like, I really do. You know, I want to get closure on Brexit. And she was saying, oh, you're such a nerd.
Listen, we'll all be gone before that happens.
That's true. That's true.
That is true.
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
No, yeah, but there's always something, Brenda.
I know.
There's always something.
And tell me, is your mum still alive?
My mum is 83 and going strong. And my father is 86.
Okay.
And my mother looks after me as if I was a child. There's not a day goes by where she's not running up the road with a dinner, you know?
What I'm trying to say, do you have to take on all their pain as well?
No.
No,
I don't. And I make a point.
How do you do that?
Clear boundaries.
Really?
Yeah. You let
tell me more, Rachel.
You just, no, mum is very good at being like, I will do certain parts of worrying and then I want you to stop and I want you to just... She's always told me to not hold back just because she's sick. And mum is very good at setting boundaries, being like, I don't need you to come and sit at the end of my bed and talk to me for 2 hours. Just come up, say hi, bring a dinner if you want. But, like, just be there when I need you more than sitting there. There's no point in people sitting up for 4 hours chatting to her about nothing.
I know, some people have no boundaries.
No.
But I think if you set those boundaries, that's the best thing you can do. Be open. You might as well just be open.
Yeah.
How do you spend your time together now? What are the things you like to do
I've
together?
I've been on a week off from work, actually, so I've been bringing her around to all her social engagements, mainly.
Yeah.
We go out for lunch and all that kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, we do. Because she's off on a Monday, it's great. So it's just the two of us.
Yeah.
And, well, of course, you're working.
I'm working, actually.
Yes, she's actually working.
Sorry, yeah. She's on her lunch break while working from home.
But,
We just potter around. Hang out. The place. Yeah. We just hang out.
Yeah, hang out, which is probably, I think it's the best way.
It is, yeah.
You know.
That woman is amazing. How is she able to talk and still have a sense of humour? What a lady. And she puts her
hands...
Well,
if you can't laugh,
yeah,
that's
you know,
true.
We've gotten really good at making some inappropriate cancer jokes at home, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. What a fantastic interview. Normal treatment of this story. This young girl is inspirational. So one thinks you're amazing, the other thinks you're amazing. So that's equal. Incredibly strong women, actually crying both from laughter and sadness, listening to the amazing women on Ray discussing their illness. Two tremendous women.
Oh,
I'm in awe.
Lovely.
I'm in awe.
All women are amazing.
All women are
totally amazing.
Yeah.
So where are you now health-wise, Marie? I think we're trying to get a sense of it. You know, is it shifting? Is it... What would you like?
It shifted. It won't get better, right? So I had a scan there just after my brain scan, and the breast cancer had actually... Not got bigger, but it had spread.
Yeah.
And coupled with that, I had clots in my lungs. You know, so that, because I was finding it difficult to breathe, and it turned out I had clots in my lungs. So I inject myself morning and evening with a drug called InoHeb, and it's actually been fantastic because my breath has come back. And the last scan I had, I was stable. I was on a new treatment Verbaline or something is the name of it. I can't remember the name of it. There's been so many. Mm. And he was very pleased with that. He said, no, that's fine. You're stable. It hasn't got any worse. And then I got the pain in my leg. And then I had to have a scan of my lumbar region.
But we're getting better news about that.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, you're both in, you know, a unique position as mother and daughter. What would you say to people who are listening? What, you know, what would you like them to take away from our chat today? Or, you know,
it's not a, cancer is not a death sentence.
Okay.
But make sure, if you suspect anything, go to your GP and just get it checked out. It's so simple. Cancer care is so good in Ireland. I can't get over even the difference in 9 years since I first had breast cancer. The treatment I'm getting is even better. So it's really, and you don't get, like, I've never been sick with the chemo. Yeah. You know, like people used to get really sick.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Or they couldn't even go out.
Yeah, they
couldn't go out. I can go out on chemo. Mm. I, you know, I can have a glass of wine on chemo.
Listen, wait, what if I under the desk here?
You know?
And Rachel, what would you say? Say to young people who are listening today, and
because when I wrote that piece, I was like, in my typical 15-year-old self, it's like, I'm the only person who's going through this. You're not. But more people need to talk about it, because when I went looking for support, I have a therapist, she's fantastic, my family's been fantastic, but support for people going through this, it can be a bit hard to find. So I think if more people are open and just talk about what's happening to them, if they feel comfortable, I think it'll make it a lot easier. Because we do death in Ireland really, really well, or so we think, but we don't talk about it sometimes the way we should. So talking about it is the best thing you can do, in my opinion.
Well, I can tell you, there are wonderful texts coming in, because you're really touching people. It is a pleasure to meet you both. Maria, I can only wish you, you know, good health as you go into the future. And that diagnosis keeps on shifting.
Yeah. Exactly.
Shifting
the right way.
The right way.
Yeah.
Rachel, you're amazing. Fantastic. You must be very proud of her.
I am very proud. And I keep telling her that. I am very proud of her.
Yeah.
Oh, and my son. Yeah. I'm very proud of you too, son.
Well, you know, we wish you well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much
for coming in to talk to us on the programme today. And keep in touch. We'll take a break.
Cheers.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Thank you very much, Pádraig. Lots of texts in on lots of different topics, but particularly on Marie and Rachel. That interview made me stop in my tracks, Brenda, and count my blessings. Fair play to them for living their lives. And just by coincidence, I do a radio series called Like Family. It's on tonight, 10:30, RT Radio 1. And we're looking at families and loss and how they deal with loss. And there's some wonderful stories there. So if you get a chance to tune in, RT Radio 1, 10:30 tonight from a very own Like Family. Brenda, I'm losing my dad at the moment, and it's something we all have to face eventually. The price of love and grief, we might as well laugh through it, be thankful for everything we have. My mum got breast cancer in midlife 40 years ago. She died in her 90s, said Kat. And then we have a lot of texts on favourite concerts. My favourite concert was seeing the Beach Boys at Hammersmith Palladium in London in 1970, said Breed from Kilkenny. We'll be talking about Tipperary and Kilkenny in a few minutes. But anyway, Fleetwood Mac was by far the best. Saw them twice in Dublin. Robbie Williams' Phoenix Park was on Reel 2, said Ursula in Limerick. Brenda, my most fantastic memories of concert were in the Grand Old Osprey in Nashville in 1988. My lovely husband Paul and sister Kathleen, they've both passed away. Lovely memories. What about this one? Best ever concert. Big Tom and Gert in County Galway in 1969. My first dance fronted the Red River Valley Boys. Thank you very much. Keep them all coming in. 51551. Now, I am so delighted. I really am delighted to be joined in studio, but not by one, but by two Johnnies. Tips finest. The two Johnnies are here beside me. Johnny B and Johnny Smacks. Hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Every time I've done this show, I said, we have to get the two Johnnies, and now here we are.
We're past security. We're in. Thank you so much for having us, Brenda.
No, I'm delighted. Now, I'm trying to get my head around, like, there may be some people who don't know who you are. So, do you want to start by telling us, Johnny Smacks, who you are, what you do?
I suppose we are comedians, podcasters, entertainers, I would say is the broader term. And we do our comedy show and we do our podcast every week. And
that's right. We started about 3 years ago. And you remember Brenda,
because
Brenda gave us our first ever slot on national radio. The Marty Squad, Tip versus Limerick. We were on the Ennis Road out of Limerick City, and the rain was coming down and there was no sign of Marty. And I was trying to talk to Anna Geary, and Brenda put the arm around me and she brought us on and we had a chat with Marty.
And that was the beginning.
That was the beginning. Yeah,
so I'm sure I've breastfed you ever since. Yeah.
We still haven't cut the apron strings off just yet.
So, but I mean, the humour is obviously, it's based on GAA, it's based on country life a lot, and kind of mixing it all in.
Yes, not exclusively country, no, but it is true. We still live down in Tipperary. We chose to live down there. It's full of characters and the content just writes itself. We're on our own GA committee at home and we don't do anything. We just go on it to try and get a few laughs, a bit of content, a bit of material.
All right. Now, I mean, I can't... How many YouTube followers or whatever have you got? Give me... Do you have any figures in your head?
The views are up around 15, 20 million views on YouTube, I think, yeah. And now we're doing Spotify as well. The Spotify is where all the cool kids are now, Brenda. Yeah. It's streaming music.
Well, congratulations on your new single. It's number one again on iTunes.
Again, oh God.
Again.
Oh, stop, will you?
Will you go on? Sinead, tell us about this new single.
So, yeah, the new single by the two Johnnies, Sinead. It is that kind of classic in school unrequited love story. May or may not be about a girl I went to school with, not going to say.
Called Sinead.
Yeah, but Johnny knows the kind of fellas who were coming in swooping the good-looking women in school.
That we always lost out to them, and that's kind of where the idea for this song came around. Like, we all know those guys who had just finished school and managed to get the money together to get some sort of a car, which was probably a debt trap, but they were able to pick girls up in school, you know, and act cool, and we were cycling down, you know, in the lashings of rain with school bags and near trousers, as they say.
A Honda Civic lowered right down to the ground, you know, making and then, you know, a slit in their eyebrow. Them lads. So that's the story. He
and
takes
it's the heartbreak, isn't it, when you're there and you've spent maybe, you know, 3 or 4 years looking at some girl across the classroom.
Doing her homework for her, yeah. You know?
So there was a taxi driver back home in Ross Grey who said to me once, oh, they think it's forever when they're in school until they're in the bedroom listening to love songs. And that's he's so right.
Okay. Well, look, it is number one, right? Mm-hmm. We have a little listen.
That'll be
Sinead.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Let's have a little listen. I mean, you both sing, play, write. You're actually secret musicians, is that
it's
right?
It's a hidden talent.
And you're in competition with George Ezra. How's that going for you?
Yeah, we somehow managed to get him off top spot with the last time that we released a single, and we were in America and we couldn't get him off top spot, and everybody thought it was hilarious to put George Ezra on repeat on the jukebox in America as a joke for us. But eventually we came home and we had to release another song to get him off top spot, but we got him off eventually. So
Look, the reaction has been amazing because people probably know us from our podcast.
Yes.
And so the things that kind of occur on the podcast, they turn into sketches and they turn into songs. So we'd have been talking on our podcast about like trying to help someone who was a late bloomer, trying to help them get their first kiss, their first shift, you know, maybe how to approach the opposite sex. And so we came up with the song Sinead, and then that became a single.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get this out of the way first in case our conversation drifts.
Okay,
you're doing your world tour. World tour. Hollywood, LA, Australia. What's going on?
It's amazing.
Two lovely lads from Tip.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
When we got our tour poster sent through, I literally sat down for 20 minutes staring at it, just going, I cannot believe this is happening. You know, it's amazing. Like, I just wanted to get out from behind the butcher counter, and now I did, and now I'm going to LA. This is great.
It's mad. So it's a live podcast. So it's kind of a new enough format, to be honest. So a podcast, if you're listening to a podcast, you're probably listening on your own.
Yeah.
Maybe you're out walking or you're commuting to work, like the radio. But the live podcast, then it involves maybe a bit of stand-up and then a big discussion, an interview. We finish with a bit of song, a bit of madness. So it's somewhere like, you know, the Late Late Show, like up to 11 with a little bit of Wolf Tones and a bit of Bingo Loco. It's a discussion and it's comedy, but it's a lot of fun.
So, and you're kicking that off.
The London Podcast Festival.
Yeah.
And then we're coming back. We're doing Dublin Vicar Street, Cork Opera House, wow. UCH in Limerick, Galway, and up to Belfast.
All right, that's done.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay, so Tipperary, Kilkenny.
Thought you'd never ask.
From Kilkenny here? I'll do the Kilkenny bit because my husband's Kilkenny. So
well, that's your issue now,
Brendan. That's my issue. How excited are you for Sunday?
It's great. I mean, you remember in 2016, that was when we had just started the Two Johnnies then, and it was like all the build up to the All Ireland, and that's how we kind of got going, and that was our first big breakthrough, was that Tipperary song. And now we're kind of back 3 years later, and it feels like we've come full circle, and Tip have come full circle. They've had a few bad years in between. We're going to call it a mini famine. Yeah. And hopefully it's going to come to an end on Sunday.
Our Lord and Saviour, Liam Sheedy, is back over Tipperary. And I think when Liam Sheedy was appointed manager of the Tip team, myself and Johnny Smacks booked accommodation in Dublin for the All-Ireland final weekend. That is the faith we wow. have in that man.
Yeah. Yeah, but what about, I mean, Brian Cody, come on. Yeah. Like, seriously, lads, are you
Darth
not terrified?
Darth Cody, yeah. as we call him.
Brian Cody and that Kilkenny team are like an ex-girlfriend that just won't leave you alone. They yeah. just keep coming back. And eventually, you know, they'll get you back. And it's like Kilkenny, they might get us back on Sunday.
In fairness, Kilkenny are a savage team.
They are.
Like, they pulled... it was like highway robbery against Limerick. Limerick were happy out on the way to the All-Ireland, and then bang, Kilkenny stole it. Like, they're a serious team and players. Like TJ Reid, I don't know, we're going to have to hire a sniper or something, because that man is unstoppable. So Kilkenny will be favourites, and that's what GA lads
that's
like to
what
do.
You like.
So we're going to give the next 10 minutes building up the opposition, Brenda.
Yeah. Now, we have a big Kilkenny flag hanging out of a bedroom window in our house.
We'll have to get that taken down immediately.
Just to let you know. How long have you guys known each other? Like, are you friends since childhood, or when did you first fall in love?
Some would say we're still children.
I guess we know each other around 9 years. It's 9 years since I moved from Roscrea to Care. So that was like from North Tip down to South Tip, you know.
Different worlds.
Yes. It's like coming from Compton to yeah. somewhere else. But it was great. We got to know each other. I started playing football with our local GA club because I transfer clubs, and that's where I met Johnny. I needed somewhere to stay. He needed a lodger. Love at first fight, you know, yeah. as he says himself.
So you actually stayed with each other?
Well, we lived with each other yeah. for 4 years.
How
yeah.
did that go?
Oh, I was wrecked from cleaning up.
I thought it was great. He's very tidy. Yeah. No, it is. You know, a load of lads living together. That's what you do. When you come out of school or college, ever, it's great to live with your mates, mm-hmm. and that's how we started doing all this madness. We started singing in the mirror and taking the mick out of people online, you know. And then the Two Johnnies. I mean, it's hard to come out of school and say, "Oh, when I grow up, I want to do podcasts and songs and stand up comedy." Like that job position doesn't really exist. We kind of make it up as we go along and we evolve. And there is a plan, but every day
is
something
it?
Different.
Where is it? But you both had careers
yeah.
that were different to this. It's a big thing to kind of give up what you're doing, you know, because we all need the regular Bob coming in every week.
My mother is still panicking, to be honest. You know, she's still freaking out that I've left my job. She's still saying, "You're like professionals," she says now. And I said, "I'm afraid to tell you, ma'am, we are professionals." And no, of course, it's a massive jump when you give up any job.
And what you tell us what you did
so
before.
So I was a butcher in a local supermarket in Care. And it was great because I'm telling you, if you can entertain a woman who's going crazy about the turkey you've given her for her Christmas dinner, and you can still send her off with a giggle and a laugh, that's easier than any show in Vicar Street, I can tell you that. And you know, it was great. I was a butcher, I loved it and all that. It was
When somebody comes up to the counter, can you tell by the way they walk
yeah.
up to the counter yeah. and the way they look at the meat?
100%.
What are the kind of things, what cut is that?
Know your good customers from your bad customers. I once had a man who was trying to haggle me over 4 cent.
Yeah,
you know, 4 cent. Yeah. I don't know what he's going to buy of it, but yeah. when I used to see him coming in then the entrance, I would automatically just disappear into the back.
And would you give all the women the? I could just imagine.
Oh, I had him eating out of the palm of my hand, Brenda. Oh. Yeah, yeah.
I had that put aside just for you, now, Brenda. Yeah, I was thinking of you when I cut that steak.
That's it. Do you want me to go home and cook it for you? I used to say that. Used to be the great line. Oh, that you could sell a mat, and then you sell him a boot.
Well, I think it's a very special relationship between a customer and a butcher. Would you agree?
There's more trust between a butcher and a customer than it's between a doctor and a patient. I can tell you that now. They'll trust the butcher with anything.
Yeah. And then Johnny B.
Yes.
You were doing something very traditional.
That's right. My family in Care were hurley makers. So I used to spend my day covered in sawdust on the bandsaw and the sander making hurlies, and the chat all day, all the customers were coming in talking about the hurling. So I was really up to speed on, like, you know, the West Tipperary under 12 league, because I had all the kids coming in and I knew all the stories about the hurling. So that was great that I could talk hurling all day and then in the evening play hurling.
And did you play, like, or do you play?
We still play.
We still play,
you still play for...
Yeah. For care.
The under 14.
No. So yeah, we still play junior hurling. So our club.
No, I'm going to start laughing.
Yeah, no, genuinely.
No, I shouldn't.
Yeah, yeah.
What, do we not look like hurlers, Brendan? No.
No, I certainly don't. No, but yeah, we do, and we get, it's brilliant, you know.
Where do you play, Johnny?
I'd be a full forward. Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
What about you?
See, he plays full forward because he hates passing the ball.
Yeah.
Yes. What about you, Johnny?
I have to give it to Smacks and he does the scoring. I'd be out in the half forward line.
Yeah.
And are you nice? Are you good player? Like, are you dirty? Are you rough? Do you get carded?
Well, I would just like take this opportunity that Johnny Smacks is currently suspended from all club action because he is serving a 3-month ban for...
is this serious?
Yes. Yeah. He had a disagreement with an official.
Yeah. Mm. I remonstrated a little bit too loudly.
Your Honour.
Yeah. You know, if he's listening there, I'm very sorry.
No. I hope he's allowed into Croke Park. He's banned from all GAA action. I hope you're allowed into Croker.
Brenda, them two Johnnies are class. Even the Kilkenny crowd like them.
Hey.
Kilkenny was the first show to sell out on our comedy tour.
No way.
Yeah, last year. It was amazing. And we didn't know what to expect. Was it going to be Rotten Tomatoes or, you know. But they were lovely, lovely people.
Yeah, they won't be lovely if you go down next Monday.
No, they're just like regular people.
Speaking of regular people, what has John Milan ever done on you two guys? Like, seriously.
We love John Milan.
Mm.
He was, do you know what? He's some legend. We went down to interview him last week and he was brilliant. He arrived in with 3 blahs and I was like, is this for real? Like, it's like he's your typical Waterford person. Real warm, real funny, great wit. And he sat down. He was so good with his time with us. And
I have a little video of you, Dan.
Yeah. I don't know, has he seen it? Because he says, I'm not on social media, boy. Do you know? I can't be on that social media stuff now.
He's too busy loving his county.
Yeah.
No, he's great. He just embodies the passion of GAA. Like, we asked him, would he rather he won the lotto or Waterford won the All-Ireland? And he said, without a doubt, money wouldn't mean as much as Waterford winning the All-Ireland.
Yeah.
Well, he's some man. So
he's
we made a little dance song for John Milan. It's on our Instagram if anyone wants to hear it.
Okay, question here. I think it's kind of obvious, but we'll go for it. Why are you called the two Johnnies?
Yeah, our laziness, really, Brenda. I think it was like people start calling us the Johnnies, and we thought that could be taken up a different way. So we put a 2 in front of it and call ourselves the two Johnnies. And that is the most regular question we're asked is, are your names really Johnny?
And they are.
And they are really Johnny. Well, hang on a second. I think I see Fiona Looney there. Come in, Fiona.
Hi, Fiona.
Come run down. You remember Fiona? Come in. She's after running off train.
Can I just say your studio is lovely here?
It is lovely. Didn't you want to wish somebody a happy birthday?
I wanted to wish somebody a very...
Right, you get your birthday requests out. Fiona, you gather yourself. We'll take a break. I'm back with the two Johnnies and Fiona Looney in studio.
Oh-ho!
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Very interesting suggestion here. Two Johnnies for the Eurovision.
We've heard that a lot. Depends where it's on. If it's on somewhere warm, we're up for it. If it's on in like Iceland or something.
And we have a very good track record with Johnny's at Eurovision.
We do.
We will not wear leather pants.
Johnny or white jackets.
Yeah, but Johnny won it twice and you've two Johnnies. There you go. Jeez, there's something there. You want to say something very quickly, Johnny.
I have a very special happy birthday to Michael Donoghue. Woo-hoo. He's turning 80. A local legend in Kildare, this man is, right? He's one of the founding members of Alan Wood GA Club and was recently inducted into their Hall of Fame. He captained the mighty 1961-62 team and they won a Leinster title and he never goes on about it. He recently shot a hole in one on the 16th hole in the Royal Curragh Golf Club. He trained an under 13 community games team to All Ireland success. He volunteers with Community Games Special Olympics St Patrick's Day Committee.
And
he has a great tan. What a man. Who is this Michael Donoghue?
This is my dad. Happy birthday,
obliging daughter.
Fiona Looney has just joined us. You're late, Fiona.
I am late.
Let's get going. I am late.
And we're going to be talking about lateness and what's acceptable levels of lateness. And I have to say, I've just got off a train from Galway.
And it actually, it reminded me of the old days because we got caught behind another train. Like, that used to happen. And when we eventually passed it out, just beyond Port Arlington, we passed it out. And it was like as if they'd felled every forest in Ireland and put it on the back of a train. It was an unbelievably long train full of logs. Oh, and you're just in this kind of Kafka-esque thing, and knowing I was coming on to talk about how it's not acceptable anymore for people to be late. Because, you know, when we were growing up, like, people, things didn't start till everyone showed up.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't a start time. And I'm actually reading a book at the moment which is set in Nigeria, and they still have that in Nigeria. They've this very, they don't look at clocks. Things start when everyone's there. And I think we used to be like that in this country, and I think it was kind of better because people get very frustrated. You know, like my train was 10 minutes late. All trains used to be 10 minutes late because they left 10 minutes late because, like, you know, not everyone was on, you know. And I can remember that. Like, I can remember my auntie coming up from Cork, and, like, the Cork train you think would be reliable.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would leave when there are enough people on it. Yeah. And I kind of think we've lost something.
We have definitely lost something because we all get very obsessed, but I'll only wait 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Why didn't you text me when you were on your way?
Oh, and we get consumed by, like, it's not the lateness, it's the not texting, you know.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then you get now, we're now at the level of, it used to be kind of, I'm really sorry, I'm 10 minutes late.
Yeah.
Now it's, I'm really sorry, I'm 2 minutes late. And so, you know, we're kind of,
wow.
we're reducing that little window of acceptable lateness all the time. We're turning into the Germans.
I know.
But it must be almost unimaginable for young people now who've grown up with mobile phones all their life to think, what if you didn't have a mobile phone and somebody didn't turn up? You just have to get just, over it.
Yeah. You had to wait. You could wait hours.
We're rushing against the clock because you were late.
Blame Irish Rail.
Yeah. Talk to me about your thoughts on the All-Ireland and the dates, not necessarily the result.
Well, I just don't think that All-Ireland finals have any place in August. And I know I'm not the only person who thinks this. And I think Donald Cusack has been fairly vocal recently on this. As we know, it was a 3-year experiment. We're 2 years into it. It's hellish. The fact that, the fact that the hurling final is on Sunday, and we're only in the middle of August.
What about the just kids? Seems,
but
the schools.
You see, I think the GAA are missing a big trick here, and I think they didn't factor that in. Like, I know, and look, you know, privileged enough to grow up in Dublin. When we went back to school in September, but I was in an all-girls school. But still, if you were in an All-Ireland final from the day you went back to school, you were making the banners, putting the pictures up on the window, you know, like doing all this malarkey. And then the Sam Maguire, happily in our case, would come. Well, of course, went to the boys' school, not to the girls' school. But like by association, you know. But kids really go for that. And it's great for the non-sporty kids. The kids who don't play get really connected to the GAA at the age of kind of 4 or 5 and beyond. And I think the GAA are missing out because they're all still on holidays and they'll still be on holidays. They'll only just be back a couple of days before the football final.
You know,
and,
what? You know, we're only just getting missing going, a trick, aren't we, guys? Yeah. We're only getting going.
And it clashes with Electric Picnic. What are they thinking?
It's like eating Christmas dinner at Halloween, isn't it?
It is. It's just wrong, isn't it?
Listen, I have to finish up, but good luck, guys. You're on the Up for the Match.
We can announce it, preview. The two Johnnies will be singing on Up for the Match
in a neutral way,
Saturday night.
Yes. Enjoy the All-Ireland, Fiona. Enjoying the All-Ireland in the football.
Well, I make the most.
Dublin Five and all that. Drive for Five and all that. That is all we have time for on the programme today. Thanks to the amazing team who worked on the show. Two Johnnies, Fiona Looney and everybody who took part in it. Happy birthday, Daddy. Have a great day. And Mary Wilson's up next with Drive Time.